It causes me grief that so many bear the name of woman. Their voices are all similarly bright, yet some of them are quick to falsity, while others avoid it. Thus the story is varied. That all of them should share a single name brings shame to my heart. Womanhood, your order, should turn and guide itself to faithfulness. Many people say of poverty that it accomplishes nothing good, yet any faithful person who endures it can save his soul from hellfire. A woman once did this. As a result, she received eternal gifts in heaven. It seems to me that few alive today would renounce earthly riches for the sake of heavenly reward. I know of no one like this. Man or woman, all are one to me. They all behave this way. The noble Lady Herzeloid became a stranger in three countries. She bore the burden of her joylessness. She was so free from falsehood that neither eye nor ear detected it. For her, the sun was shrouded in a mist. She ran away from pleasures of the world. The night and day were all the same to her. Her heart knew nothing but that it felt sorrow. This sorrowful lady left her country, going to a forest, a wild area in Sultane, and not to see the flowers in the plain. Her grief had so completely filled her heart that she cared nothing for any garland, be it red or faded. To escape what might occur, she brought with her the child of Gamorit. The people that accompanied her there attended to the building and the farming. She focused her attention on her son. Before he came of age, she gathered her people together, the men and women alike, and made them swear on their lives that they would say nothing of knights. For if the joy of my heart were to discover what the life of a knight is, that would cause me great grief. Therefore, employ the power of your wit and refrain from speaking of knighthood. Their arrangement travelled on an anxious path. In this way, the boy was brought up in the wilds of Sultane, deprived of his kingly inheritance, with this single exception. With his own hands, he constructed a bow and little arrows, and he shot many birds that he encountered. But whenever he shot a bird who had sung loudly before, he would weep and tear his hair, which suffered as a result. His body was pure and beautiful. He washed himself every morning in a stream by the meadow. He knew nothing of grief except as to the songs of birds, whose sweetness touched his heart. It swelled his little bosom. Tearfully he ran to the queen. She asked him, "Who has done this to you? You were out on the meadow." He told her nothing, in the way that children still behave today. She asked him about it for a long time. One day she saw him gazing up at the branches towards the birds. She knew then that it was their song that swelled her child's bosom. His lineage and desire drove him thus. Queen Herzeloid directed her anger towards the birds, although she knew not why. She wished their song destroyed. She instructed her farmers and attendants quickly to construct traps and catch and kill the birds. The birds were able to defend themselves. They evaded many deaths, so that a part of them remained alive, and happily they sang. The boy asked the queen, "What do they have against the little birds?" He asked for peace. His mother kissed him on the mouth. She said, "Why should I turn from his command, who is the supreme god? Should birds be robbed of joy because of me?" The boy said to her, "O mother, what is God? Son, I tell you this sincerely. He is brighter than the day, yet he gave himself the aspect of a man. Son, heed this wisdom and turn to him in your distress. His faithfulness has ever helped the world. Another power, though, opposes him, a dark one who is full of faithlessness. Be sure to turn your thoughts away from him and also from the inconstancy of doubt." His mother explained to him all about the dark and the light. After that, his eagerness awoke. He learned to throw a javelin, with which he brought down many stags, which his mother and her people put to use. In springtime and in snow, his shooting felled the wild animals. Now here's something strange. When he shot down a weight that would have been a burden for a mule, he carried it home by himself. One day his wandering took him far away to a mountain slope. He broke a tree branch off so he could make its leaves a reed. Close by him was a path. He heard the sound of horses' hoofs. He raised his javelin and said, "What have I heard? If only the devil would appear in his evil fury, I would surely stand up to him. My mother says to be afraid of him, but I think she is lacking bravery." and so he stood all ready for a fight. Now look, here came galloping three knights, as fair as anyone could wish, and armed from the feet up. The boy thought for certain that each of them was a god. He remained standing no longer, but fell upon his knee there in the path. Loudly the lad cried out, "Help, God, you must have help that you can give." The leader became enraged when he saw the boy lying in the path. "This dim-witted child of Walais is holding up our travels. Where we Bavarians come in for praise, I too must praise the people of Walais. Though duller than Bavarians, they are similarly stout-hearted. Anyone who grows up in either land is distinguished in this way." Just then a knight, splendidly attired, came galloping by. He was in a hurry. He was pursuing two knights who had stolen a lady from his land and who had a head start on him. To the hero, this was disgraceful. He grieved at the plight of the lady, who went before him in a dreadful state. The three knights were serving him. He rode a fine Castilian horse. Very little of his shield remained. His name was Carna Carnans, the Count of Ulterlech. He said, "Who is blocking the way?" When the boy saw the knight, he took him to be a god. Never had he seen a vision so bright. The knight's surcoat swept the ground. His stirrups were adjusted to just the right length. Each of his legs rang out with little golden bells. His arm chimed with bells when he lifted it in greeting or attack. It rang together with his sword. The hero was eager for fame. Thus came the noble prince, wonderfully attired. Then Carna Carnans addressed the boy, that blooming garland of all manly virtue. "Young sir, have you seen two knights riding past, who don't know how to act in knightly ways? They are perpetrating a crime and are completely without honor. They have kidnapped a lady." Whatever he said, the boy thought he was God, just as Herzeloid the queen had told him when she explained about his shining light. Therefore he said in all sincerity, "Now help me, God of help." And the son of King Gamorit bowed down in supplication. The prince said, "I am hardly God, though I gladly follow what he says to do. Here you would see four knights, if only you could look properly." The lad asked him, "I hear you speak of knights, what do you mean? If you lack godly power, then tell me, who grants knighthood?" "King Arthur does that. Young sir, if you come to his house, he will give you a knightly name that you will never feel ashamed of. You may well be of knightly lineage." The heroes examined him then. In him they saw God's handiwork. I know this from the adventure, which was told to me in truth. Never had man's essence been so perfectly realized since Adam's time. For this he was praised widely among women. But then the lad spoke again, and his speech caused his hearers to laugh. "Ah, knight god, what might you be? You have so many little rings encircling your body, up here, down there." And then he put his hand upon the steel, wherever he could see it on the prince. He began to examine the armor. "My mother's maidens wear their rings on necklaces, and they don't fit together so tightly." The boy said to the prince exactly what was on his mind. "What is this for that fits you so well? I can't remove it." The prince showed him his sword. "You see, if anyone attacks me, I must defend myself. Therefore I wear this armor, and it protects me against being shot and stabbed." But the boy quickly replied, "If a stag wore this kind of covering, my javelin would not hurt it. As things are, many fall dead before me." The knights were annoyed by this delay due to the boy, who was so naive. The prince said, "God protect you. Would that I had your beauty. God would have granted you every wish, if only he had given you wits. May God's might protect you from harm." He and his men rode on, travelling quickly, until they reached a clearing in the forest. There the nobleman discovered Lady Herzeloid's ploughs. Unfortunately, he didn't know her people. Those whom he saw began to plant and then to till, driving stout oxen. The prince bade them good morning, and he asked them if they had seen a lady who was experiencing distress. They answered what he asked. They couldn't avoid it. "Two knights and a maiden rode through here this morning. The lady complained loudly. The others used their spurs to goad her along." It was Meljacans. Carnan Carnans overtook him and took the lady from him by force. Before that, she was bereft of joy. Her name was Imain of the Bear Fontaine. The men in the fields despaired as the heroes rode past them. They said, "How has this happened? If our young lord has seen the helmets of those knights, then we have not kept watch here well at all. The queen will reprove us when she hears of our failure, for he came by here this morning while she slept. In fact, the lad forgot all about shooting stags, small and large. He went straight to his mother and told her what had happened. She collapsed. The words he uttered caused her such distress that she lay before him unconscious. When the queen regained her senses, which had been overcome before, she said, "Son, who has told you about the knightly order? How did you learn about it?" "Mother, I saw four men who shone more brightly than God. They told me of knighthood. King Arthur's regal power shall furnish me a shield with which to serve and to seek knightly fame." This statement caused fresh grief. The queen did not rightly know what she could contrive to do to keep him from the purpose he expressed. The naive but noble lad asked his mother to give him a horse. That caused her to sorrow in her heart. "I will not deny him that," she thought, "but it must be a very bad one." The queen thought further, "How easily the people start to mock. I shall bedeck my child's beautiful body with foolish clothing. If he is beaten up with fists and clubs, perhaps he will come back to me." Alas, for her terrible grief, the lady took a sackcloth and cut for him a shirt and pants, which were all one piece and partially covered his white legs. That was the typical clothing of fools. Over his head he wore a hood. Two boots of untanned calfskin were cut for his legs, but none of this diminished her great sorrow. After thinking the matter over, the queen asked him if he would stay the night. "You should not leave here until I've passed my wisdom on to you. On unknown paths you must beware of dark fords. Where they are shallow and clear, then you should boldly ride in. When you meet someone, you should give him your greeting. If a wise old man is willing to teach you his wisdom, you must listen eagerly and not become irritated with him. Son, keep this in mind. If you can win the ring of a good woman and her greeting, then take it. It will provide relief in your distress. You should give her your kisses and hold her tightly in your embrace. That brings good luck and high spirits, if she is honorable and good. Know also, my son, that the proud and bold King Leolin took two countries away from your princes. These countries, Walais and Norgals, were to have been yours to rule. One of your princes, Turkentals, met death at his hand. He has slain and driven out your people. If God is willing, I'll avenge it, mother. I'll pierce his body with my javelin." When the sun rose the next morning, the lad made up his mind to go directly to Arthur. Queen Herzeloy kissed him and ran after him. Then the sorrow of the world afflicted her. When she could no longer see her son, who rode away, for who would welcome that? Then that lady, free of all falsehood, fell upon the ground, where grief stabbed her until all that was left her was to die. The death she suffered in its loyalty ensured that she escaped the pains of hell. How fortunate for her was motherhood. She travelled on the path of loyalty, a root of goodness and a branch of humility. Alas, that we no longer see her like in this, the 11th generation. Instead, many today are false. Yet every loyal woman should wish the lad well who has raised himself above her. Then this handsomely constructed lad turned towards the woods of Brizzlejan. He rode until he came upon a brook. A rooster could have crossed it easily, but grass and flowers grew in such a way that rendered it all dark, and so the lad avoided fording it. He rode beside it all that day, according to the guidance of his wits. He spent the night as best he could, until the daylight shone upon him. The lad proceeded all alone to a clear and well-shaped ford. On the other side was a meadow on which there was a tent, which had been constructed at great expense. Made of three-coloured samite, it was high and wide, with smart-looking ribbons decorating its edges. It had a leather screen that could be pulled over it whenever one desired because of rain. Inside, the wife of Duke Orelus of Lalander, the noble duchess, was winsomely reclining like a knight's beloved. Her name was Jeshut. The lady was asleep. She carried the weapons of love, a gleaming red mouth, the heart's desire of an avid knight. As the lady slept, the lips of her mouth came apart, heated with the fire of true love. So lay this image of desire. Her teeth were of snow-white ivory, well set in her mouth, small and close together. I don't think anyone will make me used to kissing a mouth that garners so much praise. Seldom has such a thing happened to me. Her sable cover reached only her little hips. Because of the heat, she had pushed it down when her lord had left her all alone. She was well-shaped and moulded. No art was spared on her. God himself had constructed her sweet body. This lovely lady also had a slender arm and white hand. The lad saw a ring there. It drew him toward the bed, so that he put his body next to hers. He thought about the counsel of his mother, when she had spoken to him of women's rings. Therefore the handsome lad sprang from the carpet onto the bed. The sweet and chaste lady was rudely surprised to find the lad in her arms. Of course she awoke. With shame and with no laughter, the genteel lady said, "Who is on top of me? Young sir, your eagerness has gone too far. It seems you should find something else to do." The lady cried out loudly. He ignored what she said and pressed her mouth against his. Before long, he was hugging the Duchess to himself, and he took her ring. On her smock, he saw a brooch. He tore that from her. The lady had only a woman's weapons. To her, his strength was overpowering. Yet a great battle occurred. The lad complained that he was hungry. The lady, whose body was slight, said, "You can hardly eat me. If you had any sense, you would find some other food to eat. Over there, bread and wine, and 2 partridges as well. Though the serving girl who brought them was hardly thinking of you." He took no heed of where his hostess sat. He ate a hearty portion and drank deeply. The lady thought his stay in the pavilion was far too long. She thought he was a boy completely bereft of wits. She began to sweat with shame. Nevertheless, the Duchess said, "Young sir, you must leave my ring and my brooch here. Now go away. If my husband arrives, you will face some anger that you had best avoid." At this, the well-born lad replied, "Why should I fear your husband's anger? But if it injures your honour, then I will go away." Then he went up to the bed and took another kiss. That caused the Duchess grief. The lad rode off without saying farewell. He did say this, however, "God shield you, lady. That's what my mother told me I should say." The lad was pleased with his spoils. When he had ridden for a while, perhaps a mile or so, someone arrived. I'll tell you who it was. By the dew in the grass, he saw that his lady had had a visitor. Some of the tent ropes had been trampled, and someone had ridden over the grass. This famous and noble prince found his wife in there, all overcome with grief. Then the proud royalist said, "Alas, woman, how freely I have given you my service. So many knightly prizes have now been lost in shame. You have another friend." The lady pleaded with tearful eyes that she was innocent, but he did not believe her story. Yet fearfully she continued, "A fool came riding in here. Of all the people I have ever seen, his body was the most shapely. Against my will, he made off with my brooch and my ring." "So you found him pleasing, and you spent time with him?" She answered, "No, by God. All the same, his boots and javelin were too close for my comfort. You should watch what you are saying. It is not seemly for a princess to accept that kind of love." But the prince said, "Lady, I have caused you no harm unless you are ashamed of one thing, that you gave up the title of queen to become a duchess by marrying me. The situation is to my disadvantage. Yet my manhood is so strong that your brother Eric, my brother-in-law, the son of King Lac, may well hate you for it. That clever man knows I am held in such high esteem that nothing can be said against me, except that before Purin he defeated me in a joust. But before Carnot I paid him back in full. In the joust my hand sent him backwards off his horse. My lance drove your token through his shield. At that time I hardly thought some other lover would receive your love, my lady Jesuit. Lady, of course you know that my jousting has felled the proud Galois, the son of King Gandin. And you were right there when Plihoplihari rode at me in a joust and did not stint in his prowess. My jousting threw him over his horse so that he no longer sat in his saddle. I have won many prizes and have thrown down many knights, and now I get no benefit from this. Instead, a great disgrace oppresses me. They all hate me, the knights of the Round Table, 8 of whom I fought, as all the maidens saw, for the Sparrowhawk of Canadic. I won the prize for you and glory for myself. You saw it, as did Arthur, whose household my sister, the sweet Cunewere, No laughter can come from her mouth until she has seen the man who deserves the highest praise of all. Would that such a man might arrive. Then there would be a battle like the one this morning, when I fought and injured a prince who challenged me in jousting. The jousting that I gave him caused his death. I will refrain from pointing out in anger that many men have struck their wives in punishment for lesser guilt than yours. If there were any service or favour that you by right could ask of me, you would have to do without it. No longer shall I warm myself in your white arms, where lately I have lain in love and wiled many a blissful day away. I'll drain the redness from your mouth and fill your eyes with it. I'll take away whatever joy you feel and teach your heart to sigh. The princess looked at the prince. Dolefully her mouth said, uphold your knightly fame in judging me. Faithful and wise as you are, you also have the power to cause me great pain. You should hear my defense. For the sake of all women, please do so. Thereafter, you can cause me grief enough. Were I to die by other hands, so long as your honor suffered no harm on my account, that event would please me well, since I am the target of your hatred. But the prince continued, Lady, you have become entirely too haughty for me. This is behavior that I shall correct. No longer shall we eat or drink together. Our lying together is forgotten. I shall provide you no clothing except what you are wearing sitting there. For a bridle you shall have a cord of bast. Your horse shall endure hunger, and your beautifully decorated saddle shall be destroyed. Suddenly he ripped and tore the samite from it. Having done that, he smashed the saddle that she used to ride. Her purity and womanhood were forced to endure his hatred, and tied it up again with cords of bast. Thus suddenly his hatred came upon her. At that he said, Lady, let us now ride. If we were to happen upon the one with whom you shared your love, I would be glad of it. I would face him in combat, even if he could breathe fire like a wild dragon. Tearfully and with no laughter, that greatly suffering lady departed in sorrow. She cared but little for what she endured. It pained her that her husband was upset. His sorrow caused her such great distress that she would rather have died. Let us bemoan the way her faithfulness has caused her to endure such suffering. Were I to face the hatred of all women, still the lady she shoots pain would cause me grief. Thus they rode along the trail. The lad in front of them rode swiftly too, but he was unaware that he was being hunted. Whenever his eyes saw someone, the good lad would approach him and greet him, saying, That is what my mother said to do. So came our simple boy riding down a slope. He heard the voice of a woman beside a cliff. A lady was crying out in genuine anguish, for her true happiness was split in two. The lad rode quickly over to her. Now hear what the lady was doing. There the lady Sigoon was tearing her long brown braids from her head in grief. The lad observed her. The prince Sianatulander lay dead in the maiden's lap. She sat and moaned in her unhappiness. Whether of happy or of sad aspect, all must be greeted, so my mother said. God help you, spoke the lad's mouth. Here in your lap I have found a sorrowful object. Who gave this knight his wounds? The lad continued eagerly. Who shot him? Was the weapon a javelin? It seems to me, lady, that he is dead. Won't you tell me something about who killed this knight? If I could ride him down, I'd gladly fight with him. Then the pure lad reached into his quiver. He found sharp javelins there. He also still carried both objects he had taken from Jeshut when he had stupidly accosted her. If he had learned the skills that his father had been wont to practice, the mark would have been hit with more success. For the Duchess was all alone. As it was, she suffered much on his account. For more than a whole year, she had no contact with her husband's body. That woman was the victim of injustice. Now listen to what I say about Sigoon, who justly complained of her sorrow. She said to the lad, You have virtue, all honor to your sweet youth and your lovely face. Truly you will be rich in blessings. No javelin slew this knight. He met his death in a joust. You are faithful by birth to feel such pity for him. Before she let the lad ride on, she asked him his name and told him he reflected God's image. Good son, sweet son, beautiful son, so I was called by those who knew me at home. As soon as the words were spoken, she knew him by these names. Now hear him correctly called, so that you might know who is the master of this adventure. He stood by the maiden. Her red mouth said without delay, "In truth, the name you bear is passable, which signifies a hole right through the center. Great love made such a furrow because of your mother's faithfulness. Your father left her sorrow. I tell you, and not in boasting, your mother is my aunt, and with no falsehood and no trickery, I'll tell you who you are. Your father was an Angevin. Your mother's heritage is from Valais. You were born at Canvalais. I know that this is certainly the truth. You also are the king of Norgals. Some day in the capital King Rivals, your head shall wear the crown. This prince was slain on your behalf because he defended your land. His fidelity never faltered. O fair and sweet young man, two brothers have caused you much harm. Leolin took two kingdoms from you. This knight, together with your father's brother, was slain in jousting by Duke Aurelius. He left me here in grief, as you can see. This prince of your land served me with spotless honor. I was a member of your mother's household. Dear and good cousin, now hear the tale of how this came about. A hound's leash was the cause of all his pain. He died serving us, and he suffered the pain of love for me. I was weak-minded not to give him my love. This is the reason for the sorrow that has ground my joy to bits. I love him now that he has suffered death." He responded, "Cousin, I am sorry for your sorrow and my failure. If I am ever able to avenge the death he suffered, I will gladly do it." He was eager to seek battle, but she sent him the wrong way. She feared that he would lose his life, and she would suffer even greater harm. He went along a road that led towards the kingdom of the Britons. It was smooth and wide. He gave his greeting to everyone he met, whether riding or afoot, knight or merchant. He said, "This is what mother said to do." He did this without meaning any harm. The evening was approaching, and suddenly he was very weary. Then the companion of simplicity saw a good-sized house. Inside it was a self-regarding host, who was of low birth, official and devoid of all kindness. Hunger caused the lad to turn that way and tell the host of the distress he felt. He said, "I wouldn't give you half a loaf of bread, not if you asked me 30 years. The one who asks for generosity from me is making ill use of his time, for I look after no one but myself, and then my children. You will not be admitted here today. If you had anything of any worth, of course I'd let you in." Then the lad showed him the Lady Jesuit's brooch. When the low-born man saw it, his mouth became a smile, and he said, "If you would like to stay here, my dear child, the residents here will all honor you. If you feed me well tonight, and tomorrow you point me correctly towards Arthur, I am pledged to serve him. Then you can keep the gold." "Yes, I will do so," said the low-born man. "I never have seen such a handsome person, and though it must be a miracle, I'll take you to the round table of the king." The lad remained there for the night. In the morning he was somewhere else. He could hardly wait for daybreak. The host also prepared himself. He went in front, the lad riding behind, for both were in a hurry. "My lord Hartmann von Uwe, a guest of mine draws near to the house of the Lady Guinevere and your lord King Arthur. Ensure, please, that while there he isn't mocked. He is no fiddle, nor is he a rote. So let them play some other instrument, and find amusement for themselves that way. If not, your lady in need, and her mother Karsnafeed, will go through the meal and suffer harm to reputation. My mouth, if ever it speaks mockery, will do it to support a friend who's mocked." Then the fisherman and the lad of the story approached a capital city. There they saw Nance. Then he said, "Child, God protect you. That is where you should ride in." Then the lad, lacking in wit, said, "You should lead me further." "Not on my life. Those men are so well bred that if a low-born man went up to them, that would be a serious misdeed." The lad rode ahead alone through a meadow not too wide. There he stood, surrounded by bright flowers. He had no curvenal to train him. He knew nothing of courtesy, as is the case with men who are not taught. His bridle was made of bast, and his little horse was frail. It stumbled many times, nor was his saddle covered at all with new leather. On him one could hardly see any samite or soft ermine. He had no cloak that needed fastening. Instead of a jacket and surcoat, he carried a javelin. His father, who had been a model knight, was better dressed on that carpet before Canvanice. He who had never felt the grip of fear now saw a knight approaching on a horse. To him he gave his customary greeting. "God keep you, so my mother said to say. Young sir, may God reward both you and her." So spoke the knight, the son of Arthur's aunt. King Uta Pendragon had brought him up. Thereby he claimed hereditary rights to all the land of Britain. His true name was Ether von Gaheviers, but men referred to him as the Red Knight. His harness was so entirely red that it made the eyes turn red. His horse was red and swift. It had a red hood piece and a covering of red samite. His shield was redder than a fire. All red was his padded jacket and well cut. Red were the shaft and point of his spear. According to the hero's wish, his sword was stained bright red, and yet the sword was tempered and was sharp. This knight, who was the king of Cumberland, held in his hand a goblet made of gold, the bowl of which was lavishly engraved, and which he had removed from the round table. His skin was white, his hair was red. Forthrightly he told the lad, "Blessed be your lovely body. A pure woman has brought you into the world. Good for the mother who bore you. Never have I seen someone so handsome. You are the true vision of love, her defeat and her victory. The joy of many women will be yours, but after that you will succumb to grief. Dear friend, if it's your purpose to go in, then please report to Arthur and his men on my behalf. I haven't run away. I'll stay right here, and I will gladly wait for any who prepares himself to joust. Not one of them should be surprised at this. I rode to the round table in order to claim possession of my lands. My hand took up this goblet to press my claim, but clumsily I spilled wine in the lap of the Lady Guinevere. I did that which I had set out to do. If I had chosen to invert a torch, I would have gotten soot upon myself." The brave warrior quickly added, "I didn't do it in order to steal. Being a king, I have no need of that. Now, friend, please tell the queen I spilled the wine on her by accident." All those worthy men sat there doing nothing. They may be kings and princes, but why do they allow their host to thirst this way? Why don't they come retrieve his goblet? Unless they do it, their good name is lost. The lad said, "I will do as you have asked." He rode away from him and into Nantes. Little children followed him to the courtyard in front of the palace. A great commotion sprang up there. A crowd gathered all around him. Ewenet, a lad free of falsehood, approached him and offered to keep him company. The lad said, "God keep you. That is what my mother said to say when I was still residing in her house. I see many Arthurs here. Which one will make me a knight?" Ewenet began to laugh. He said, "You cannot see the right one here, but soon you will." He led the lad into the palace, where the worthy company was assembled. The lad's voice resounded in the hall. He said, "God keep all you lords, especially the king and his wife. My mother instructed me to greet them above all, and those who sit at the round table, because of their great renown, she bade me greet as well. But there is one thing I don't know. Which one of you is the host? I bring that one a message from a knight. I saw him. He was red from head to foot. He's waiting patiently outside the city. It seems to me he's looking for a fight. He also says he's sorry that he spilled the wine upon the queen. Oh, if only the king had given me the clothes he wears, that would bring me joy, for they look so knightly." The outspoken lad was pushed around this way and that. They noticed his appearance. It seemed to them that no lord or lady ever had a fairer form. God was in a good mood when he created Parsifal. Thus he who had little fear of anything was brought before King Arthur. No one could oppose him, for he expressed God's will. The queen saw him too, before she left the palace where she had sat before. Arthur looked at the lad. He said to the simpleton, "Young sir, may God reward your greeting. I will gladly put my life and all I own at your service. To do this seems fitting."
"I hope to God that it is really so. It seems to me a year has passed since I decided to become a knight, and more bad than good has come of the delay. Don't make me wait any longer. Grant me the honour of being a knight.
That I will gladly do, said the host, if my honour is enough. You are so lovely that any gift I give you will be to my benefit. Therefore I will not fail to do it. But you must wait till tomorrow. Then I will prepare you properly. The well-born lad paused there, swaying like an idiot. He said,
I won't ask anything of you. A knight came riding towards me. If I can't have his armor, then I don't care to hear of kingly gifts. Those I can get from my mother, for after all, I'm told she is a queen.
Then Arthur said to the lad, I don't dare give you that armor because of the man who owns it. As things stand, I've lived with worry, not because of any guilt of mine, since he stopped paying me homage. He is Ether von Gaheviers, who has pierced my joy with sorrow. You would, as king, hardly be generous if you refrained from giving such a gift. Give it to him, said Kay then, and let him face the knight upon the meadow. So long as someone has to play this game, here is the string, and there we see the top. Let the child handle this affair. The women will praise him for it. The battle must be fought, and the chance taken. What matters either of their lives to us? To hunt the boar, you have to lose a dog. It's true I do not wish to tell him no, but I am afraid that he may meet his death when I should help him be a knight instead. So spoke Arthur from true generosity. Soon the lad was to receive the gift, and it would cause him grief, for now he wished to leave the king at once. Both young and old followed after him. Iwanet led him by the hand to a balcony not too high. From there he could see the length and breadth of the palace. In fact, the balcony was so low that he heard and saw something that caused him pain. The queen had placed herself at the window with knights and ladies. They could all see it. There sat the fair and noble Lady Guinevere, she who could not laugh until she saw the man who had received or was deserving of the greatest prize. If not, she'd never laughed throughout her life. She hadn't ever laughed until the lad came riding by, and then her lovely mouth began to laugh. Her back suffered as a result. Kay the Seneschal took the Lady Guinevere de Lalant by her flowing hair. He wound her lovely locks around his hand and fastened them without a lock. Her back had never sworn upon a staff, and yet a staff was used for striking it, so that when all the striking was complete, it had cut through her clothes and through her skin. Then that foolish man said, Your noble reputation is ended in disgrace. I am the net that catches it. I will pound it back into you until you feel it in your limbs. Many worthy men have ridden to King Arthur's court and to his house, and you failed to laugh for any of them. Now you laugh for this man, who can't accomplish one thing as a knight. In anger, many wondrous things occur. He hardly had any right to give that maiden such a punishment, for which her friends complained on her behalf. Even if she had been a knight, the beating would have been a disgrace, and she was a princess by birth. If her brothers, Aurelius and Leolin, had seen it, there would not have been so many blows. And Tanor, the one who never spoke, was held to be a fool for just this reason. His speech and her laughter stemmed from the same event. He never spoke a word until she who had been struck began to laugh. But when she laughed, his mouth spoke, saying to Kay, God knows, Sir Seneschal, that Guinevere de Lalant is being beaten because of that lad. However far away he may go, his hand will cause your joy to be destroyed. The first words you have spoken threaten me. I don't suppose that they will bring you joy. Then Antanor too was beaten. With blows much knowledge was imparted into the ears of that clever fool. This is what Kay immediately did. Young Parsifal could not help but see the misery of Antanor and of the lady. His heart was sick with their distress. Several times he gripped his javelin, but there was such a crowd around the queen that he refrained from making a throw. Then Iwanet took his leave of Gaburit's son, who journeyed alone back to Ether in the meadow. To him he reported that no one in the court was willing to joust.
The king gave me a gift. I told him, as you told me, how you spilled the wine by accident, and how you are sorry for your clumsiness. None of them wants to fight you. Give me the horse that you are riding on, and all your armor as well. I received that gift in the palace, and I need to use it to become a knight. If you don't give it to me, then I'll refuse to greet you. You'll give it to me if your wits are sound."
The King of Cumberland said, "If Arthur by his hand has given you my armor, then he has also given you my life, if you can take it from me. That is the love he shows towards his kinsmen. Whatever your relation to him before, your service now has quickly been repaid."
"I demand what I deserve, and he did make me this gift. Stop this foolish talk and give it here. I won't be a squire any longer. Instead, I shall carry a knight's shield."
He grabbed at the knight's bridle.
"Perhaps you are Leolin, about whom my mother has complained."
The knight turned his spear shaft around and hit the lad with such force that he and his pony fell into the flowers. The hero was quick to anger. He struck the top of the lad's head with the shaft so that blood ran out. Parzival, the good lad, stood there seething with anger in the meadow. Then he grasped his javelin, just where the knight's helm and visor left an open, unprotected space. There the javelin went through his eye and through his head so that he died. He fell, that enemy of falsity. The death of Aether of Gaheviers caused women to sigh and hearts to break. The women's eyes were full of tears. All those who loved him found their joy was gone. Their play was spoiled and their desire dulled. Parzival the simpleton turned the knight over and over. He couldn't get the armor off him. Here was something strange. His white hands could not untie or remove the helmet laces or knee pieces. He kept on trying, but he lacked the knowledge. Then the horse and pony began to neigh so loudly that Iwanit could hear it from where he stood at the end of the moat outside the city wall. He was Lady Guinevere's squire and kinsman. When he heard the horse neighing and he saw no one sitting on it, he astutely hurried to the spot. He did this out of true loyalty to Parzival. There he found that Aether had been killed and Parzival was in a fool's distress. Quickly he ran over to both of them. Then he praised Parzival for the victory he had won over the King of Cumberland.
"God bless you. Now please tell me what to do. I don't know what I'm doing. How can I get the armor off of him and onto me?"
"I can easily show you that," so said the proud Iwanit to the son of Gamorit. There on the plain before Nantes, the armor was stripped from the dead man and given to the living one, whom extreme foolishness still ruled. Iwanit said, "Your boots aren't fit to wear with armor. Instead, you should wear knightly clothing now." These words caused grief to Parzival. The good lad said,
"I won't cast off anything my mother gave me, whether for good or for ill."
To Iwanit that seemed strange enough. He was used to courtly ways, but all the same he went along. He felt no anger at all. He fit two shiny steel leggings over the boots. He fastened two spurs, not with leather straps, but with ribbons. It seemed to him that these were made of gold. Before giving him the gorget, he tied on the knee pieces. Very soon the impatient Parzival was encased in armor from the feet upwards. The lad of the story then asked for his quiver. "I won't let you have a javelin. The knightly order forbids it." So spoke Iwanit, the worthy lad. He fastened a sharp sword around him. He taught him how to draw it, and said that he must never flee a fight. Then he brought over the dead man's Castilian horse. It had long and slender legs. The young man leapt into the saddle without using the stirrups. People today still speak of his swiftness. It was no trouble to Iwanit to teach him how to use his shield with skill and how to deal out damage to his foe. Then he put a spear in his hand, but the lad objected to it. He asked,
"What is this for?"
"If someone rides at you in a joust, you must boldly break it and run it through his shield. The more you do that, the more the women will praise you." As the adventure reports, he sat his horse so well that no painter from Cologne or Maastricht could have rendered a better scene. Then he said to Iwanit,
"Dear friend and companion, here I have achieved what I have sought. Go back to the city and give my regards to Arthur, and tell him also of my great disgrace. Return his golden goblet to him. A knight saw me and forgot himself and beat a lady because I caused her to laugh. Her cries of pain caused me distress. They do not touch the edge of my heart. The lady's undeserved pain strikes at its very center. Do this, please, for the sake of our friendship, and for the sake of my shame and grief. God keep you. I will leave you now. May he preserve us both.
He left Ether of Gahaviers, lying lamentably on the plain. That man, full of joy and life, was fair in death. If knightly deeds had brought about his end, if he had died in jousting with a spear, who would bemoan his fate? Instead, a javelin caused him to die. Iwana gathered bright flowers for his funeral. He turned the javelin into a remembrance of Christ. The pure and proud lad constructed a cross by attaching a piece of wood to the blade of the javelin. Nor did he neglect to return to the city and tell the doleful news to many knights who wept and ladies who grieved. A great lamentation arose. The dead man was brought in with great pomp. The queen rode forth from the city. She bade them bring the holy relics. Queen Guinevere spoke words of sorrow for the king of Cumberland, who was slain by Parzival's hand. Woe in the highest! Arthur's fame shall break in two because of this strange event. He who was destined to achieve the greatest prize lies slain before Nantes. He came here to assert his heritage. He received death. He was one of us, and no one ever heard of any misdeed that he committed. He was free of all wild treachery, for he had been purged of that. All too soon must I bury this treasure chest of fame. His heart rich in courtesy, the seal upon that chest, brought about the best behaviour wherever a man in true faith might bravely seek a woman's love. A fruit bearing ever new seeds of grief is planted among women. Grief emanates from your wounds. Your hair was so red that your blood could not make these bright flowers any redder. You have silenced the laughter of women. The richly praised Ether was buried as befits a king. His death taught women how to sigh. He lost his life because of his armor. The simple Parzival's desire for it caused his death. Later, when he had learned more, he would not readily behave this way. His horse was exceptional. It performed great work without tiring, in cold or hot weather. It never sweated from traveling over rocks or woods. There was no need to tighten its saddle strap by even a single notch, even after riding for 2 days. That simple man rode further that day in armor than an experienced man would have ridden in 2 days unarmored. He rode mainly at a gallop, seldom at a trot. He didn't know how to make the horse slow down. Towards evening, he saw the pinnacle and roof of a tower. To the simple man, it seemed that towers sprang up before him as he rode. In fact, the towers stood upon a house. It seemed to him that this was Arthur's doing. He thought of Arthur as a holy man whose powers ranged far and wide. The simple man said, "My mother's people are poor farmers. None of the crops they plant in the forest grow this tall. There is always too much rain." He was riding towards the castle of Gurnemans of Grahars. A broad linden tree stood there on the green lawn. It was neither broader nor taller than it should have been. Both the horse and the road led him to the place where the lord of the castle in the land was sitting. Great weariness caused him to carry his shield in the wrong way, swinging it too far back and forth, and not at all in a manner that was worthy of praise. Gurnemans the prince sat all alone. The linden's leaves provided shade, as they should have, for that leader of true gentility. Then he whose manners fled from falsity received his guest according to his duty. No knight or squire accompanied him there. Then Parzival said to him, without delay and with his simple wits,
"My mother told me to listen to the advice of any man with grey hair. Therefore I'll follow what you say, since that is what my mother said."
"Since you have come here seeking advice, I should give you advice, and you should follow it." Then the prince of whom I tell released a yearling sparrowhawk from his hand. It swooped into the castle. It wore a little tinkling golden bell. It was a messenger. At once there appeared several smart-looking pages. He told them to lead the guest that they saw there and to attend to him. Parzival said,
"My mother was right. An old man's speech does not stray from the truth."
At once they led him to a place where many noble knights were gathered. In the middle of the courtyard, they invited him to dismount. But he, in his simplicity, responded,
A king has said I am to be a knight. No matter what happens to me, I shall not get off this horse. My mother told me I'm to greet you all. They thanked him and her both. Then, when the greetings were complete, seeing that horse and man were both worn out, they made various pleas to get him off his horse and into a room with a hearth. Then they all said, at least you should let us remove your armor. Soon his armor was removed, but when they saw his rough boots and his fool's garb, the attendants were surprised. When they reported the discovery to the host, he was nearly overcome with shame. One knight graciously said, truly my eyes have never beheld one so noble. There is great beauty in him. His lineage is high and pure and sweet. How can one so lovely be so ill-dressed? It causes me grief to see the joy of the world done up in such a way. Yet praised be the mother who gave him birth, for everything desirable is present in him. His gear is handsome. The armor that we took from him was knightly indeed. But I see that he is bloody and has a great bruise. The host said to the knight, it seems that this was done for a woman's sake. I think not, sir. The way that he behaves, he wouldn't know of offering his service to a woman, although he looks like one who should be loved. The host said, well then, let us go and see this man whose clothing is so strange. They went to him and discovered that Parzival had been wounded with a spear that remained unbroken. Gunnemans took him under his care. His care was such that no father who attended his own children could do more. The host washed and bound the wound with his own hand. Then the table was set for supper. The young man sorely needed it, for he was experiencing great hunger. That morning he had left the fisherman without breakfast. His wound and the heavy armor that he had won before Nantes made him tired and hungry, and he had fasted all day during the journey from Arthur of Britain. The host asked him to eat. The guest eagerly complied. As if he were feeding in a barn, he put away great quantities of food. That caused the host to be amused. Gunnemans, the faithful man, earnestly bade him to keep on eating and to forget about his weariness. When it was time, they took away the service. I suppose you are tired, said the host. Were you up early?
God knows, my mother was still asleep. It's hard for her to wake up.
This caused the host to laugh. He led him to a bedchamber and told him to prepare himself for sleep. He didn't want to do it, but he had to. A coverlet of ermine was laid upon his naked body. No fairer fruit was ever born of woman. Because of great weariness and sleep, he seldom turned from one side to the other. Thus he passed the night. Then the prince of whom I have reported ordered that a bath should be prepared at mid-morning, quietly, in the chamber where he slept. This was their normal practice in the morning. They usually put roses in the water. Though they made little noise, the sleeping guest awoke. That sweet and young and worthy man went straight to his bath. Although I don't know who had ordered it, maidens in fine clothes, lovely in appearance, attended to him in a fitting way. Immediately they washed and treated his bruises with soft white hands. He didn't mind at all. In this case, he showed some sense. He was at ease, and he enjoyed himself. He wasn't rude to them in ignorance. The maidens, chaste yet bold, attended to him. They talked among themselves, but he remained silent. He thought it must not be too early, for in them he saw the light of another day. Thus radiance contended with itself, but he outshone them both. His body did not lack for radiance. They offered him a bath sheet, but he refused to take it. The presence of the maidens shamed him so that he would not put it around himself. At this the maidens left. They dared not stay any longer. I think they would have preferred to see if he had any damage down below. Womanhood is always faithful. It suffers for a friend's distress. The guest went over to the bed. A garment all of white was prepared for him. A band of golden silk passed through it. They stretched red wool hose on the legs of him whose courage never failed. Oh, how fine his legs appeared in them. Their excellent shape was apparent. His coat and cloak were long. Both were of brown wool, well cut, and lined with white ermine. They were trimmed in front with sable fur that was broad and black and grey. The gentle young man put them on. His coat was fastened by a costly belt,
and beautifully adorned with a precious brooch. His mouth burned with redness. Now came the host with the strength of loyalty. Proud knighthood followed him. He greeted his guest. When that was done, each of the knights said that they had never seen such a handsome person. They sincerely praised the woman who had brought such fruit into the world. From honesty and good upbringing, they said, he'll be rewarded well wherever he seeks his fortune. Love and welcome are prepared for him. May his honor bring him enjoyment. Each of them said the same thing, and so did all who saw him after that. The host took him by the hand. They went together. The prince I have described asked him how he had rested that night in his house.
Sir, I would be in a bad way if my mother had not said I should come here on the day when I left her.
God bless both you and her. Sir, you do me honor. Then the hero, lacking wisdom, went with him to where they sang to God and for the host. During Mass, the host taught him how to behave in blessed ways, to make his offering to cross himself, and how to turn his thinking from the devil. Then they went to the palace where the table was set. The guest sat down with his host and ate heartily. The host courteously said, Sir, I hope you will not mind if I ask you to tell me where you are coming from. He told him everything that had occurred, how he had ridden away from his mother, how he had taken the ring and the brooch, and how he had won the armor. The host had known the Red Knight. He sighed in sympathy with his fate. He did not withhold the name from his guest. Now he called him the Red Knight. When the table was cleared, then was a wild spirit made very tame. The host told his guest, You speak like a little child. Why do you always speak about your mother? Instead, you should talk of other matters. Heed my advice. It will keep you from doing wrong. Here is how I begin. Make sure you never lose your sense of shame. Of what use is a man who has no shame? He is always moping, shedding his honor, and directing his path towards hell. You are handsome, and you carry yourself well. You may well be the lord of a people. If you are high, and you are rising higher, then be aware you should have pity on the needy ones. Protect them from distress with kindness and with generosity, and always be humble. The worthy man who suffers hardship may well struggle with shame, that is, bitter labor, and you should be prepared to offer help. When you relieve his suffering, then the blessing of God is close at hand. For him the situation is worse than for one who begs for bread at a window. You should, as either is appropriate, be both poor and rich. When a lord wastes his wealth, then he does not behave in a lordly way. But if he hoards his wealth excessively, he also has dishonor. Instead, your path should be the middle one. It seems to me that so far you have not received advice like this. Let the ill-mannered quarrel with themselves. You shouldn't ask too many questions, nor should you refuse to give answers that are thoughtful and direct to those who probe you with their questioning. You can hear and see and turn around to feel. By doing this, you'll make your wisdom grow. Temper your pride with mercy. That's the test of whether you have followed my advice. When a man swears that he will surrender in combat unless he has done you such a wrong that your heart grieves for it, accept the oath and let him live. Often you will have your armor on. When it's removed, make sure to wash your eyes and hands to clean the iron rust. In this way you will have a lovely aspect which women's eyes will notice. Be manly and of good temper. In this way you will win praise. Hold women dear to you. That enriches a young man's life. Don't turn against them, not for a single day. That is true manly behavior. If you take to lying, then you may deceive them for a time. But true love does not reward base deception for very long. The thief complains of the dry branch in the woods that snaps and cracks and alerts the watch. Many battles occur in pathless clearings. Compare this with love. True love has a mind that sees through falsity and deceptive art. If you compromise yourself, then you will incur dishonor. Forever you will suffer painful shame. Pay attention to this lesson. I will tell you more about women. Man and wife are one, like the sun that shone today and that which we call day. You cannot separate one from the other. Both bloom from one seed. It is important to understand this. The guest thanked his host for his advice. He stopped mentioning his mother in his speech, but not in his heart, as befits a true man. The host spoke of his honor. You must also improve your skill in the knightly arts. The way you came riding towards me, I have seen many walls on which the shield hung more properly than it did around your neck. It is not too late. Let us go into the field and teach you some skills. Bring him his horse and bring me mine, and bring every knight his. Let squires come too, and let everyone take a stout spear and bring it along, and make sure they are new ones. Then the prince went out to the plain. There they practiced knightly arts. He showed his guest how to bring his horse out of a gallop with a sharp dig of the spurs, how to make it charge by pressing with his thighs, how to lower his spear properly, and how to hold his shield before himself in jousting. He said, "Now you should do the same." This had the same effect on the foolish man as the supple whip that punishes bad children. Then he called for knights to joust with him. He brought an opponent to the jousting ring. There the young man made his first joust through a shield. He surprised them all when he threw the man from his horse. The man was skilled in riding, hardly weak. Another jouster approached. Parzival took a strong, fresh spear. The young man had strength and spirit. With the heritage of Gamorit and his innate manhood, this sweet young man without a beard rode his master's horse at full tilt and aimed at the boss of his opponent's shield. The host's knight did not remain seated, but measured the field in a fall. Little pieces of the splintered spear were lying all around. He threw down five men this way. The host took him and led him back inside. Thus he took the prize in the contest. Later he would prove his worth in combat. All that saw him riding, and that knew of knightly matters, said that he had skill and courage. They thought, "At last my lord is free of cares. Let him live again as if he were still young. He should give him his daughter, Our Lady, as a wife. If he uses his wits, then he can end his suffering and grief. The man who has entered his house can make up for the deaths of his three sons. Fortune has not disfavored him." In the evening the prince entered. The table was set. He asked his daughter to come to the table. "So I have heard the story told. Now hear what the host said to the sweet liaise when he saw the maiden approach. If you let this knight kiss you, you will do him honor. He travels according to the ways of fortune. For your part, sir, you must refrain from taking her ring, assuming she has one. But she does not, nor does she have a brooch. Who would give her such things as the lady in the forest had? She had someone to give her those things you took. As for liaise, there's nothing you can take." The guest felt ashamed, yet he kissed her on the mouth. It was the color of fire. Liaise was lovely in appearance, as well as rich in genuine purity. The table was long and low. No one was there to crowd the host. He sat alone at the end. He had asked his guest to sit there between his daughter and himself. Her gentle white hands would cut up whatever the guest wanted to eat. This man called the Red Knight whenever he asked. Thus they interacted privately, and there was no one there to interfere. With proper behavior, the maiden was carrying out her father's wishes. She and the guest made a fine couple. Directly after that, the maiden left. In this way, the hero was attended to for 14 days. Just one thing troubled his heart. He wanted to fight better before he enjoyed the warmth of what is called a lady's arms. It seemed to him accomplishment like this was a worthy goal in this life and the next. And still, that is no lie. One morning, he asked for permission to leave the town of Greyhars. The host rode out to the field with him. Then his heart felt new sorrow. The prince, that paragon of truth, said this, "You represent the fourth son I have lost. It seemed to me that I had been repaid for each of those 3 times of suffering, for after all there were but 3 of them. If someone were to strike out with his hand and hit my heart and sunder it in 4 and carry off each piece, the action would be to my great advantage. One piece would be for you who ride away, the other pieces for my noble sons who bravely died. But such are the wages of knighthood. They are a whip with sorrow in its tail." One death crippled all my joy, that of my handsome son, who was called Shentaflures. He was helping Conwiramurs, who refused to surrender her life and kingdom. He lost his life at the hands of Clamide and Kingrun. Because of his death, sorrow has cut my heart, so that, just like a fence, it's full of holes. I am distraught. You ride away from me too soon. Alas, that I can't die, since you are not satisfied by the lovely maiden Liaise or my land. My second son was Count Lascoit. Ida, son of Noit, slew him in a contest for a sparrowhawk. Because of his death, I am bereft of joy. My third son was Gersgri. Beside him rode Mahout in her beauty. Her proud brother, Ekunat, had given her to him as a wife. He rode to Scheudelakurt in the capital city of Brandigan. There death did not pass him by. Mabonagrin slew him. After that, Mahout lost her beauty, and my wife, his mother, died. Great grief commanded her to follow him. The guest understood his host's sorrow, because he had explained it so clearly. Then he said, "Sir, I am not wise, but if I win the kind of knightly honour that lets me ask for love, then you shall give me Liaise, your daughter, the lovely maid. You've told me of too much sorrow. If ever I can relieve your suffering, I'll do it, so the grief you bear is less." Then the young man said farewell to that faithful prince and all his company. The prince's three of sorrows sadly became a four. He had experienced his fourth disaster.